City Talk 105.9 official podcasts online at citytalk.fm.
The Sullivan Show on City Talk 105.9.
Hi, and thanks for downloading Dino's Download, the best of the highlights from last week's Sullivan Show, and what a week it was. Joining me now, of course, as usual, my producer Jay. How are you, Jay?
How are you, mate? You okay?
What a week.
What? Do you know what? Every week just gets bigger, fuller and better.
It's amazing.
It's just chock-a-busy each
week.
Just
pack them in.
Yeah, we do.
And we covered everything.
It's the best way to be, though, you know.
It is.
Lots of guests, lots of interviews, lots of scandal.
Yeah.
And we've got tons of that on this download as well.
Now then, I think you were a bit sort of eyebrows raised when the first guest that we're going to listen to popped into the studio.
This is a lady, Maggie Hamlin. Now, I'll be honest with you, hold my hands up. I'd never heard of Maggie Hamlin, ever.
Well, that's fair enough.
She's an artist, not really my cup of tea.
Yeah, international artist, came to Liverpool. The exhibition is on now at the Walker Art Gallery, and it's portraits of Liverpool great George Melly.
Yeah.
Well worth a visit.
She
was a character and a half.
She was, yes. We arranged to get someone over there to meet her and bring her over from the tower, because she didn't want to walk over from the Walker Art Gallery to the tower.
Poor Nick, he didn't know what hurt him.
Our researcher went over to meet her. Where have you been? Where's my taxi? I'm not walking, she said. So, bit of a character. So she comes up, she's sitting around, not too happy. And she just didn't have any emotion or anything on her face at all, did she?
She mellowed.
Didn't show anything.
When she got going with me, she mellowed.
But then, when we put her on, she was all right.
She was great. Yeah.
So that's coming up.
Yeah. Excellent, great interview, yeah. And also, as well, we're going to include this time around Dino's Dames. We don't usually, but it was a bit of a Dino Dames special, wasn't it?
We had a bit of a special one, yeah. We had the Chippendales on.
We did.
They're getting back together, the Chippendales. Obviously, for the Dames, they were chuffed. We had Ali and Kim in the studio. But the Chippendales surprised them, and they didn't take the clothes off. But
they surprised me. I'm talking about the Dames.
Why is that?
Because they posted a picture up on the webpage, didn't they?
Ah, yes.
Dino, the new addition to the Chippendales.
Chip and Dino. You can check that out on citytalk.fm.
Chip and
very
Dino,
funny.
I like it, yeah. Excellent.
So that's on the way too. What else
and,
have we got?
From the States, of course. Huge star. Just been re-released, or re-released, rather, on DVD. If you're a fan of Dynasty, Emma Sams, who played Fallon.
She was
talking about, she was coming in for Liverpool Fashion Week.
She was rather glamorous, wasn't she?
She was indeed, yes. So we can listen again to her. And we're coming down to earth with a bit of a bang from Emma Sams to Jim Bowen, Bullseye himself.
He is a legend,
you know. But he's a great guy.
But I've been sorting this interview out now for about 2 weeks, trying to get him on. And he was just the nicest person in the world to speak to.
Yeah, I've met him a few times.
And every time I spoke to him, he was like, oh, sorry for messing you about and all this.
He's a gent.
Such a nice man.
A real gent. So loads there to catch up with.
Great. And Owen from The X Factor. It gives us a bit of gossip backstage from The X Factor, doesn't he?
Little Owen, who claims he wasn't going out with that girl at all.
Yes.
Well, do we believe that?
More to come on that one.
We'll see. Here you go, anyway. Dino's Download.
The Sullivan Show on City Talk 105.9.
Maggie, when you're hanging an exhibition, or even before you're hanging, do you have an idea? How many paintings are there altogether? Is it about 29, I think?
Well, there are a series of 12 drawings that I did from life before he died, obviously. Because he hasn't actually posed for the ones that I've done since he died.
Right, yes.
So, I don't know, 12 drawings, about 20 paintings, something like that.
So the ones that you've done since he died, what have you used? Have you just used memory?
Well, when someone dies, you know, if you're close to them, if you love them, they obviously go on being alive inside you. I mean, for most of us, right? And if you're an artist, it seems a very natural thing to me to go on painting them. It's a way of, I suppose you could say, hanging on to them. It's a way of still celebrating them. George said, told me I would go down in art history as Maggie Coffin Hambling, because I had with my father and then with my muse, Henrietta Marais, you know, made series of work from life. And then through death, on their deathbeds, drawn them in a coffin and gone on painting them after they're dead.
So you've actually observed them in their coffin?
Yes, of course. People are surprised at that. I don't know why. It seems a natural thing to do. It's the last time you see them. Mm. I mean, for instance, with my mother, you know, whenever I'd got out my sketchbook to make a drawing of my mother when she was alive, she always arranged her hair or took off her glasses or something like that, right? When she was in that coffin, I said, I got you now, mother. You're not going anywhere now, mother. And she posed beautifully from the coffin. No, but seriously... as I'd worked from life with George, and I didn't actually see George in the coffin, so I did that one from the imagination. But there are, you know, a couple from very late in his life when he's really riddled with a cancer, which he very bravely refused to be treated for because he wanted to go on performing. In fact, the last time I saw him, he was rolling around on his bed in one of his frocks, which was a sort of exotic green caftan, with which slipped about a lot as he moved about a lot, you know, and everything was on view, really, and he was still performing. He was describing his role in the forthcoming film of the Life of Christ. I mean, he had grown especially awful pre-Raphaelite beard.
He was just talking about him moving on to the afterlife.
Exactly. But
that was his next performance,
exactly,
getting ready for that.
Exactly. He was going to be, of course, the starring role. He was going to be Jesus. Nobody else is going to be Jesus. And it took me a long while, about a couple of months after he died, to realise he was quite right. He knew he was dying. And, of course, he was going on to be Jesus, to meet his father and all that. Yeah, he performed till the last.
Yeah, was that his way of coping with death, then?
Yeah.
As he coped in a similar way in life, didn't he? With life.
Well, the thing about him was...
I mean, by being larger than life.
Oh, if you, I see what you mean. But the thing is, you couldn't faze him, you couldn't shock him. I mean, we were very, very close friends. And I'm, you know, I might have sort of telephoned him and said, George, I murdered my father last night, or something, you know, a very bad thing to think of. And he'd just sort of think for a minute and say, oh, dear Mag, what are we going to do about that? You know, you couldn't shock him. That was part of it. And, I mean, I had the very great honour of his testing his jokes on me on the telephone. And if I didn't laugh, he didn't use them. Well, this was fine until he started to get really deaf, you know, because he would tell me a joke and then he couldn't hear it. He'd say, are you laughing? You know. Anyway, he was an extraordinary, exotic creature. Obviously, all these things, the performer, the writer, multi-talented, yes. And you know, people don't come like that anymore. He's irreplaceable, and they just don't.
Well, he's a real British eccentric, isn't he? Or he was.
Well, I mean, it seemed quite normal to me. Mm. I just think it's very odd. Well, nobody sort of other people don't wear those.
To us eccentrics, of course, it does seem normal. Yes,
completely normal.
Yeah. How did you first meet?
We met at a garden party in London in 1980, where it was very, very good champagne, and I was lying on one bit of the garden path, and he was lying on the other. And somebody thought it'd be a good idea to get us together to meet. And we sort of squirmed towards each other on our stomachs. You know, he always said like snakes, I think more like worms. And we just hit it off, and there it was. We laughed at the same things. We both sort of anti-hypocrisy, cutting the crap, you know, didn't like anything pompous. We laughed, we drank, we had the same sense of humour. And I always wear very sober colours, and he wore all the colour. It was a very...
So it was a good combination, then?
I must say, it was a very sort of stinging moment of last week when they collected all the paintings from my London studio to bring them up here to Liverpool. And I said, OK, well, they're packing them and putting them in the lorry. And I went in the studio the next morning and they were gone. And that was a very odd feeling indeed, because while my studio's been full of my paintings of George, it's like he's still alive, you know. Mm. And, of course, the odd thing about a portrait, I mean, obviously a Rembrandt, a person being painted, is long, long dead, as is Rembrandt. But but the paintings go on. So I feel as if I brought George back to Liverpool. I think he's tickled pink. His brother Bill is coming tonight, and he says how pleased George would have been, because George was so fond of Liverpool, and it's like I've brought him back to Liverpool, and that's great. And let's hope one or two of these pictures stay here. And then why I've called it George always is that, you know, once there's a portrait, as long as somebody doesn't put their foot through it or something, or it doesn't get thrown away, it could go on forever. I mean, I think that spirit, I've tried to paint the spirit of George, which is unlike anything else.
Talking to my special guest in the City Cafe. If you're listening, just tuning in to City Talk 105.9, the voice of Liverpool. Maggie Hambling, ahead of this exhibition of George Melly that's opening at the Walker Art Gallery. You talked there about trying to capture the spirit of George in these paintings, Maggie. How easy or difficult is that to do?
Bloody impossible, of course, otherwise there'd be no point in trying. Mm. But, I mean, that's the same whether it's whoever I'm painting. You know, if I was painting Gordon Brown, I'd try to be painting the spirit underneath. I mean, the likeness, I'm very lucky in that, you know, the likeness just happens automatically. Mm. I'm more interested in what goes on inside the person, you know, and it's the painting that a portrait lives, do you know what I mean? Mm. Lives, you know, oil paint has this extraordinary capacity, this mysterious
That's
thing.
What you're using, is it?
Oil paint. You know, that if you do it right, then, you know, it's like that painting is happening in front of you. And you can make the paint kind of breathe and live. That's what you try to do. Sometimes you overdo it. You have to throw the thing away, cut it.
Amongst the paintings on display there, Megan, I'm looking forward to seeing the exhibition myself this evening. Any particular favourites of your own?
They're all right, mister, because otherwise they'd have been destroyed.
Is that what you would do?
Certainly.
You're not happy?
Yeah. Stanley knife.
Yeah. And get rid of them. Well, why not? That's your right as an artist, of course. Maggie Hambling, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Look forward to the exhibition this evening. Enjoy the rest of your stay in Liverpool.
Thank you very much. Bye.
This is the City Cafe with Dean Sullivan.
This is the City Cafe with you right up until 4 o'clock today. The Sullivan Show taking you right through the afternoon. Lots more to come on today's show. Coming to the Gladstone Theatre in Port Sunlight on Friday the 20th of March. It is Mr. Bullseye himself, Jim Bowen, with his own one-man show. He joins me on the line into the cafe now. Good afternoon, Jim.
You well?
Yeah, very well indeed. Yeah, your one-man show. I didn't realise you were taking this around the country.
Well, I've been doing it for years. Yeah. I don't do the stand-up anymore because at 71, very little stands up. so it's like a geriatric ramble, you see.
Right.
I do it on the ships. It's like an audience with.
Yeah, you've been doing it for a while on the cruise lines, haven't you?
Yeah, I've done the ships for years now, but I don't do the stand-up anymore. And I've been to the Gladstone with this package before.
It's a lovely little theatre, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. What lovely people. It's a cracking setup, isn't it? Because I was born in Heswall, which is
were you really?
Yeah, I was adopted.
Didn't know you had that local connection.
Well, no, to be honest, I only had it for about 3 weeks because my mother apparently wasn't married, and I was taken to a Church of England children's home in Liverpool,
right,
where I was adopted.
Ah, right.
So there you are.
So you're coming back to home ground, as it were.
Well, yes, subliminally, yeah, right. Without realising it.
So the one-man show then, Jim, did people get a chance to ask you questions, or is it just your own sort of recollections and anecdotes and so on?
Yeah, it's an autobiographical ramble, really, Dean. Yeah, 71, you've a fair amount to talk about, haven't you? And we talk about it's a bit of a walk down memory lane, to be honest. Most of the people who will be coming will probably have grey hair, and some of them have their own hips. And all of them will be of an age to remember and, I hope, enjoy what we're going to talk about. It's going back from 1937.
So, really. Jim, tell us a little bit more about the Liverpool connection then. So you came over to a Church of England children's
home in Liverpool,
yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then you were adopted. Who adopted you then?
Well, a couple called Joe and Annie Whittaker,
right,
who lived in Accrington.
Right.
They'd applied to adopt when they first got married in 1935, discovered they couldn't have children, so applied to adopt. And in 1938, I came up on the list. I popped out in Heswall to a Miss Williams, who couldn't afford to keep me, so she had sent me for adoption.
So that was your real mother. Did you ever manage to find it or track her down? No?
Never, ever wanted to. I think it's the height of ingratitude if you do that.
Right, right.
But it's not a soapbox I get on. I just think it's an absolute no-brainer.
Yeah, so a happy childhood growing up in Lancashire.
I mean, fabulous childhood, which is probably why I felt it ungracious to look for my real mother in the face of my adoptive parents, you know.
And were you the only member of the family as well?
The only child in the family? Yeah, the only one, Dean. Yeah,
so
they saw the one and said, that's it, that's enough.
They probably doted on you then, did they?
Well, I suppose I was spoiled, Although, I mean, it wasn't a wealthy family, to be honest. My father worked at the brickworks in Accrington, and my mum had been a weaver, so they didn't have a great deal of money. It was not frugal, but it was a caring existence, I suppose.
And real Lancashire jobs, those, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The brickworks in Accrington, yeah. And then, of course, weaving, the cotton mills, all round Clayton, Limours and Accrington and Blackburn and Burnley. So the eminently Lancashire roots, and of course, as was Liverpool at the time, wasn't it?
Of course, absolutely.
You know, I'm not sure about Heswall. I'm sure somebody will tell me on the night at Gladstone whether Heswall's, I think it might be Cheshire, that, you know.
Yeah, I think it's Merseyside. It's still part of Merseyside.
Well, it's nearly local.
Stroke Cheshire, yeah.
It's nearly local.
It is, yeah. Now, so growing up in Lancashire then, what was your first job when you left school, Jim?
Would you believe a dustbin man?
Really?
Yeah, I left school, failed all my GCEs, and went to empty dustbins.
Well, how did a dustbin man become a deputy headmaster?
Well, because he went back and did his GCEs, he'd failed.
Right.
The headmaster was good enough to let me go back, and I took all the GCEs again and got my head down and got them all. And then I did national service long before you were around, Dean.
Mm.
He fought for my country in Shrewsbury.
What was that like, national service? What did you have to do?
It was hard work. We really did have to paint coal white.
Mm.
I mean, it was ruthless, to be honest. But I wouldn't have missed it for the world. I did two years and then went off and I trained at Chester College, which is, again, not far from home, is it?
No, that's just down the road. Now, you're just talking about, let's just stick with National Service for a while there, Jim. There's a lot of people call for it to be, you know, reintroduced.
Yeah.
What do you think about
that? It's a no-brainer, really. I mean, we tend to see these youngsters going off the rails and we think that 2 years or even a year in a boot camp would put them right, but I don't think it would. Having said that, I don't think it would do them any harm, but that's a grumpy old man talking. I'm not sure it's the way forward.
So you went on to train teacher training then over
Cheshire Training College, yeah, Chester.
Yeah.
And then I taught until 1969... when I'd become a deputy head then at a primary school up here in Lancaster. Mm. But I've been doing the club semi-pro. I'd done them all in Liverpool in the 60s.
Well, what got you into that then in the first place, Jim?
I was a bit of a show-off then. I enjoyed... Got Doddy started me off, actually, Dean.
Right.
I went to see Doddy in 1966, tear the place to pieces at the Opera House in Blackpool.
Mm.
And I thought, oh, sure, I'd like a bit of that. I pinched, looking back at Ken now, I suppose I subconsciously pinched his bits.
I was going to say, where did you get your material
days? Yeah. In the 70s, we all pinched it.
Yeah.
All the lads from Liverpool did. I mean, Stan and George, lovely George, who's no longer with us, Bernard Manning, Mike Burton, a lovely Liverpool comic, and, of course, Eddie Flanagan, Stevie Fay, I mean... They nearly all of them were from Liverpool on the first series of The Comedians.
Absolutely.
But we just used to pinch one another's gags. I mean, PC Brigade wasn't there, so we didn't have to worry about... We were only comics, we weren't sending people to Iraq, and we didn't have these do-gooders telling us what we can talk about and what we can't. So we were just there to try and make people laugh.
Absolutely,
So we didn't think too much, a bit like the Scouse comics today, still are concerned about making you laugh rather than making political comments.
Yeah, talking to my special guest in the cafe, Jim Bowen of Bullseye fame. Of course, Jim, The Comedians was your big break into TV, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And remember then...
Johnny Hamp?
Johnny Hamp found us all. And remember, in 1970, there were only two channels.
Of course.
Only BBC and ITV. So if you could get on television in 1970, I mean, that was fast-tracked to a few quid. Now, the poor guys into the business now, I mean, they've very little chance of actually... getting that fast track.
So do you think it's harder these days
for
stand-up, yeah?
Yeah, it is. And the young comics today are far more creative than we were. I mean, we were almost dinosaurs. We just used to learn gags and rattle them out and do our own business with them, do our own thing with them.
Must have been a great experience, though.
Oh, yeah. I mean, doing the Wookie Hollow and Allinson's and the She Club and the Shakey.
Yeah.
With Pete Price, of course. I mean, Pete cut his teeth on the clubs.
But all those sort of places, they're not around anymore, are they? Where do people cut the teeth these days?
Well, I'm not sure where they do it, Dean, to be honest. I suppose comedy stores, where they get up, they do an open mic setup, where they do they're allowed 5 minutes to try, don't get paid for it, and they just hone their skills on getting chances to get up and do it. I remember in 67, 68, I used to go out every night. And I was married. I used to go every night to these working men's clubs in Accrington and ask if I could get up and do 5 minutes between the bingo. just to get used to doing it. Because
The
more you do it, the chances are you're going to get better.
Now, following The Comedians, of course, and I remember The Comedians, of course I do, but I also remember fondly Wheel Tappers and Shunter's Social Club. That was a great show, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? With Colin Crompton and the Fire Bell.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, next week's turn is nailed up on the door.
That's right. Was it a reflection of what those places were really like?
Oh, absolutely, yeah, it was. I mean, when we did the working men's clubs, we didn't have, like in theatres, we didn't have stage managers and sound men and lighting men. We had one man who was invariably a joiner, who was the compere for the night, and he did all the lights and the sound and everything. So it was a bit of a, it was a walk in the dark some nights.
Absolutely. Now, tell us, Jim, of course, we can't let you go, of course, without mentioning Bullseye. How did that all come about? Because that became such a phenomenal success.
Yeah, unbelievable. It was the biggest load of... It was horrendous in 1980. The first series set the industry back 20 years.
Are you being serious?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. And I was horrendous.
But where did the idea come from, then?
Well, it was Norman Vaughan. Do you remember Norman Vaughan?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Norman Vaughan took it to Central Television. He was doing it. A man had had this idea, and he went to Norman Vaughan and said, "Look, Norman Vaughan was famous. He's sadly no longer with us again, but he was famous." And this chap said, "He said if you can take this, he said you can have shares in it. If you can get it into somebody to look at in a television company." and he took it to John Scofield at what was Central Television then. And Scofield said, I like the idea, I love the idea, but I don't want him, and sent Norman Vaughan home.
Oh, didn't want Norman? Rose's,
no, but
Rose's
Norman
Vaughan.
Got a cheque every time the programme went out for 15 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Good on him.
It was lovely for him, because because he must have felt terrible. And the first series, they didn't give it... Well, the first show, they didn't give it 6 minutes. They burnt the first two shows.
Really?
Oh, yeah. £46,000 they cost. And John Scofield said, they're rubbish, we can't transmit those, we'll lose our licence. And I was horrendous.
Why were, this, why were you horrendous, though?
Well, I was bad because I suppose, in a way, because I was arrogant. I really thought, as a fairly bright stand-up comic with a degree, I can handle a game show. Mm. And when I went in and did it, I then realised how good Bob Monkhouse was.
Yeah.
Who was the best there ever was.
Well, were you, obviously you were not doing them for live broadcast, but were you doing them as if they were live?
Well, we tried to, but we couldn't, because I was making mistakes like, where was President Kennedy assassinated in Dallas? Well, I mean, that's not the way to do a quiz show. You're giving them the answer.
No.
And I was doing that on a fairly regular basis in the first series. And really, I should have gone. They should have got somebody else for the second series.
Well, I don't think it would have been the huge success it became if it wasn't for you, Jim.
Well, yeah, but it's weird. It's all by default. I mean, the whole thing, it's like the autobiography which we talk about. It's right place, right time.
Yeah.
I just happened to be there. And they did, in the first series we did went out Monday nights at 7 o'clock. And we inherited an audience after Crossroads of 12 million.
Mm.
And we handed over at 7.30 to you-know-what.
Yeah.
To Corrie.
The street, yeah.
And in 7 weeks...
So you're in a good slot there.
Yeah, it was what was called, Dean, a protected slot.
Yeah, of course.
Because they'd watch a fella painting a wall for 30 minutes because there was no remote. Nobody could be bothered to get up and change it.
That's right.
And we lost, in the first 6 weeks, we lost 7 million viewers.
Dear.
We went from 12 million... By 7:15, after 7 weeks, we were down to 7 million. They just switched it off in the droves.
Mm.
And for some reason, and we still to this day don't, Scofield looks back, I saw him last year, we said, why? And we're all saying, why did they suddenly switch it on again? Unbelievable.
Mm.
And we still to this day don't know.
Now, notorious for its prizes, we have to say.
I know, listen, I don't know how for time, I hope I can find this piece of ear. This will tell you, like, funny you should mention this, because we talk about this at the Gladstone. Are you ready for prizes? You shout in one.
In one?
You can hear it here, you can hear it there, you can hear it anywhere with this wonderful Walkman. In two.
In two.
That snap will be a snip with this lightweight portable camera.
In three.
When those Crocs are all greasy, life will be easy. with this dishy dishwasher.
In four.
When the weather's trying, you can still be drying with this terrific tumble dryer.
In five.
God, I'm fed up now.
Oh, yeah, well, I think we all are. No, but it became a cult programme as well, didn't it, among students?
Well,
just couldn't get enough of it.
You know, it came back. It ran for 15 years.
Mm.
And it came back on UK Gold, and then it came back on Challenge. And students who would barely be watching it with the nans on Sunday tea time, having the toast and eggies, and the students, when we do the unis, they still talk about it. So I remember it sitting with me nan, we couldn't talk during the programme and all this. And it came back again. And last year, well, Roy Walker was the same with Catchphrase. They suddenly came back again. And it was like all new audience.
Amazing, yeah.
I mean, it's all been a series of accidents, but fortunately, ones that I've been able to... thoroughly enjoy.
So, Jim, you're bringing your one-man show, like I said, to the Gladstone Theatre in Port Sunlight on... when is it?
Well, we're on Friday night. We'd love to see you there.
Yeah, brilliant.
It's a beautiful theatre, and I think... I can't guarantee it, because you can never guarantee that, but I shall do my best to give you a memorable and a happy time.
Oh, I'm sure you will. You've got wonderful, great stories to tell.
Jim,
as always, a great pleasure talking to you.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for talking to us.
Ah, nice one. That's Jim Bowen there. If you want to catch his show, it's at the Gladstone Theatre, Port Sunlight. Coming up on the 20th of March, tickets are available. The show kicks off at 7.30. If you want the box office number, it's 0151 643 8757. That's 0151 643 8757. That's an audience with Jim Bowen.
This is the City Cafe
with Dean Sullivan.
City Talk 105.9.
Now, take yourselves back to January 1991. You know, things would never be the same Again, they say, for women, the biggest US male glamour phenomenon came to the UK and took everyone by storm, and they're making a comeback. Joining us on the line to tell us a little bit more about this, of course, I've got to be talking about the Chippendales. How are we?
Hello.
Hi. How are you guys?
Are you the original Chippendales?
Yes, we are.
We're
back.
Oh, right. So did you ever go away? Was it something that you kept on doing over the years, or are you literally reforming and making a comeback?
Well, actually, we've got a new choreographer now, and everything in the show is different. We're called Here Come the Boys.
Okay.
And there's a lot of the original members, 7 to be exact, and we've got 5 new members and a singer. And so it's a mix of the old and the new.
Okay, so
basically, you see, you have 2 of us here today to talk to you, and 7 will be on tour.
Yeah. Okay, so it's Kevin and Bernie joining us, yeah?
That's right.
Yes.
Okay, so tell us about the new show then. What sort of things can the girls expect?
I'm quite interested in what the new moves are, actually.
Right. Well, the moves are probably the best part, because now we've got Chris Judd on board as our choreographer, and so everything is very hip, very...
Now, Chris has worked with the likes of Jennifer Lopez, Michael Jackson.
Yes, that's correct.
You don't get any better than Chris. And another fact that not a lot of people know is that Chris actually got his start with Chippendales. He was on tour with us when we went all through Scandinavia. And so he's one of the guys, and he knows the ins and the outs of, and no pun intended there, being a Chippendale.
And who came up with the original idea then, the original concept? Who thought it would be a good idea to strip off in front of a load of women?
Me. No, sorry, it wasn't my idea.
You're here to finish it.
Yeah. As always.
That was Steve Banerjee. He came to the United States in 1967. I think it was in the late 70s, 78. He was the owner of a nightclub in Los Angeles. And for some reason, the one night a week that he had men on, you know, doing performing, became more popular than the women's nights. And so he formed Chippendales in the early 80s.
And it just kind of evolved from there. I mean, it went through many, many different incarnations. And I joined in 1988. And it seems like every time that we'd put a new show together, it'd get better and better. And just like it is now with Here Come the Boys.
Now, when you came to the UK, of course, you were phenomenally successful. You know, sold out every theatre you went to. You know, a long run in the West End.
Yeah.
Did you expect that?
No, we were sold out every single night that I remember on tour, and it was just crazy getting in front of 2,000, 3,000 screaming women. I had just finished at the university with a degree in marketing in the end of December 91. And thought I was going to be going that route in my life, and I got recruited by the Chippendales, and I came over here to see, you know, to perform first time in front of all these women. It was a big culture shock for me, and it was great.
And how do you deal with you know, gangs of screaming women? Because I presume they were around at the stage door after the show as well, were they?
Yeah, well, we deal with them.
Everything in moderation.
Yeah, I'm sure you did.
Were you one of those, Ali?
Oh, did you know what? It's so funny. As I'm sat here listening to you, I can't help myself. But please tell me that you've got your tops off and you're oiled up, because I'm actually having palpitations just listening to you. My mind is just suddenly getting thrown back to that time when you were prancing around on stage.
But you know, that I think that was such a big part of it, and that's a big reason why there's so much excitement even now. I mean, I thought to myself, okay, when these guys gave me a call and said, do you want to come out? And I thought, well, you know, didn't they really get enough of us the first time, you know? But it's been so exciting, you know, seeing people come to the hotel, a lot of people we haven't seen before. You know, we just were in the sun. We did BBC One yesterday. And it's just like, you know, all the hysteria is starting all over again.
I think it's as well. I mean, I, being a woman, I know what women are like. And there definitely is that pack mentality. Do you know what I mean? You must have been in
fear
for your life.
When we started to rehearse, you could feel the energy. The old group was back together again. It was great. You could feel it.
And we were like, you know, hey, do you remember that time? And you were doing this, and we went over there, and yeah.
Well, guys, I hate to raise the whole age thing, but we are all 20 years older than we were in the 80s.
Yeah.
And how is it? I mean, who's kind of, you know, proving themselves to be the best here? Is it the older boys taking on the younger boys?
Well, I think, Kevin,
well, we all went to the gym yesterday, and I think the younger boy showed us up a little bit there, but... But honestly, we've all learned how to stay fit back in the day when we were with Chippendales. And so after life continued after Chippendales, I think all of us knew what not to eat is so much more important than what to eat. And, you know, me with my landscaping, I stayed fit. So when they called me 3 weeks ago.
You're a gardener?
Yes.
God, I need my gardening doing.
Any excuse.
Let's talk after the show.
So Here Comes the Boys is the new production. What can audiences expect?
Yes, professionalism, absolutely. A fresh new look, because we're sadly, Ali, doing away with the thongs.
Oh, don't.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
What, it still has that original element, though, that's just a one-off. It's the it factor. There's something original about our group that I don't know. You just don't see it with all the carbon copies.
Yeah.
Boys, I've got to ask, if it's not the thongs, what is it?
Well, you're going to have to come to the show.
Well, I was going to say, are there any surprises? Did you ever see the movie The Full Monty?
You know what? I have a story about that.
Okay.
After I got off tour and I had, you know, hung up my G-string, somebody said, you know, you have to see this movie Full Monty. And I saw the movie posters for it, and I delayed seeing it for probably about 2 or 3 years because I had such fond memories of being in England, and I thought that maybe they were going to take the piss?
You just said
You just did.
Just don't say it again that's all right.
I'm sorry.
I can edit that.
I thought that maybe that they were going to make fun of what we were doing, and I thought that they were going to put it in a bad light, and I was so surprised because
I think it was a compliment to you.
Oh, I thought it was an amazing compliment. I think I've seen the movie probably 4 or 5 times.
And it was something that everybody recognized when they went to see that movie. They knew exactly who you were talking about.
And I think that that people really can relate to them, just like we were those guys, but we were just a little bit in better shape. You know, a lot of the guys originally joined Chippendales because we were searching, you know, because everybody's searching for something, you know, to make them feel special. And we were lucky enough to, you know, land in Covent Garden doing it.
So Kevin and Benny, bringing your show to the UK. You're touring around?
Oh, yeah.
We've got 44 dates scheduled so far. There's already been some new interest as of recent for Europe and especially Eastern Europe.
And you're coming to Liverpool itself, aren't you?
We are coming to you guys first.
You open in Liverpool?
Yes, that's true.
Well, I'm sure the Liverpool girls are going to give you a very warm welcome. It's the 26th of May.
26th of May. Now, guys, I'd just like to let you know, I normally present the breakfast show. You are more than welcome to join me for breakfast.
Oh, my God, yeah. We would love that.
Excellent. Well,
thank you. Breakfast in bed.
Breakfast in bed. There you go, hello. Kim. Yeah, you heard it here first on City Talk 105.9. Well, we look forward to you coming to Liverpool. Have a great time.
Thanks
for having us.
It's a dream come true. Thank you.
Oh, pleasure. Here, wow, the boys are back with a vent. Look at these two.
Don't you love Americans?
You can't sit still.
Oh, goodness. I honestly was, you know, before I was thinking, oh, no, I'm going to be all cool here and go, yeah, Chippendales, whatever.
You couldn't contain yourself.
Honestly, having a bit of a flush.
If I could just hijack your show, Dino, just for a second, if you'd like to head to the City Talk website, if you could just do that on your screen over there.
Oh, yeah, okay.
If you could do that and just go to the Sullivan Show page, you'll see there's a bit of a surprise on there because you won't have realised that actually with the Chippendales coming to town, Dino's Dames, that's me and Ali today, it says wanted to introduce you to their newest member, and that's Chip and Dino.
Where are we?
If you go to the Sullivan Show page, and for everyone, it's literally just gone live at 2 o'clock afternoon. Click on the Sullivan Show and follow the link through, and you will see. I mean, some people think these pictures have been mocked up. I can tell you that they are for absolute real.
Oh, no! What?
And you can have a look at the.
Hold on a minute.
Chip and Dino.
I don't believe it!
Dino, it gets better if you scroll down,
no,
actually.
Don't. Look at me, I'm blushing. Can you see? I'm going. I am literally blushing, and that has not happened in years.
I'm here to see that.
Look at that.
You've got to go onto the website. God, Dean, you're looking in good shape.
That was at the gym last week.
I didn't know you had that tattoo on your left breast.
We've definitely got it. It's the first time I've ever said this. We're going to an ad break now.
The Sullivan Show on City Talk 105.9.
joining Liverpool Fashion Week for its closing event at the Olympia, Scouts of the City. Joining me now into the cafe is my next guest, Emma Sam, star of Dynasty. Good afternoon, Emma.
Well, good afternoon. I recognise that music.
You too. It takes you back, yes?
It does, yes.
Happy memories of Dynasty?
Oh, very happy memories. It really was an enormously fun show to do. I mean, hard work. We usually had to start at 5:30 in the morning, but it was incredibly good fun.
Now, of course, you played Fallon, famously played Fallon in the series. I noticed that a few of the series have just been released on DVD.
That's right. The first two, which I was not in. In fact, I don't think I started until about the fourth season. So I've got a little ways to wait until I'm completely embarrassed by people watching me on the DVDs.
But still great interest in the series even now, because they were hugely popular at the time.
Well, it's really interesting, isn't it? Because it even after it finished, it's sort of become quite iconic, which is a big word for just a television show. But actually, you know, it's sort of come to represent a lot of things about the 80s.
And what was it like working with the likes of Joan Collins, of course, our very own Joan Collins?
Oh, well, I mean, you know, she was my mum on the show, and she was always delightful to me. But I think because we're both being English, you know, we had a lot to talk about living out in LA.
And, of course, you know, on a programme like Dynasty, fashion was very important, wasn't it? You know, the sort of clothes, the dresses that the girls wore.
It was all about the fashion.
Yeah.
It was that was a very, very big part of the show. People would watch to see what on earth we would be wearing next. And they spent a huge amount of money on the most exquisite outfits. I mean, obviously, some of them look very dated now, though not all of them, interestingly. And shoulder pads are coming back.
I was going to say, 80s fashions are on the way back, aren't they?
I could pull all those old clothes out of my loft now.
Why not? Yes. Well, and Emma, did you ever get a say in what you did or didn't wear on the show?
Yes, I mean, they would never put you in something if you hated it. And for example, if there was going to be a big party on the show, then Joan and Linda would sort of bagsy a colour, as it were, and I would bagsy a style. I used to like their strapless, which actually has aged as a style much better than some of the other creations that they came up with. So in retrospect, I think that was a good move.
And then how long were you involved with Dynasty, or Dynasty, as it's alternatively called?
I know, it's tricky, isn't it? I never know which one to say. I did 2 years on Dynasty, then I did a year on Colby's, and then I did another year back on Dynasty.
So you were bouncing around there. But of course, it all started off with General Hospital over there in America, didn't it?
It did, and bizarrely enough...
And that was a big hit for you.
Well, do you know, the show is still running, and in fact, next month, I'm nipping back over to LA to do another couple of weeks on it.
Oh, you're really great.
Yes.
same character, I presume.
Who, thankfully, has aged exactly the same amount as me.
Well, that's great. That's great news. How did you get involved with the States and General Hospital in the first place?
Well, I went over there, like so many other actresses, in the hopes of getting work. I worked as a waitress, which is also a very traditional route to being an actor over there.
Time-served route, yes.
And then I just got a very lucky break, or two or three, really.
And, of course, we've seen you back here in the UK on programmes such as Holby City and Doctors and even The Bill.
Yes, that's right.
Do you have any preferences for either, working in the... There must be very, very different styles of working in the States to here in the UK.
Well, surprisingly, film crews and TV crews are very similar on both sides. There's a few different expressions, which you have to be careful with, because they're sort of rude here and not there, and the other way around. Yeah. So you can get in a bit of trouble if you say the wrong thing. But no, actually, it does feel very similar.
And do you have a preference yourself?
Well, I love being back in England. I mean, if I could only work here, that would be superb for me, because, I have kids now. I've travelled so much for work in the past that if I could do everything from home, I would. I'm really delighted to be back here in the UK.
And you mentioned that you're going back over to the States to do a couple of appearances in General Hospital. Anything else lined up here? Because the recession's cutting in, biting into everyone, isn't it? Everyone's work.
It's true, isn't it? I do a lot of writing as well. I write screenplays and things like that, because that works well with the children. So I'm working on a couple of those at the moment. And I'm sort of trying a few other entrepreneurial things. All ways of finding ways to pay the bills that don't involve going away to make movies in different countries, which I really don't want to do.
Excellent. Now, you're visiting into Liverpool. Tell us about that.
I'm doing a fashion show. It's a bit nerve-wracking, actually. Especially because I don't know what dress I'm going to be wearing yet. I know it's by Rosa Couture, though. So that's got to be good. But other than that, I haven't seen it or tried it on yet. So.
No, you've not. Is that not something that you've done before, then, gone down the catwalk?
I have done a couple of other charity fashion shows, but a long time ago. And it's different enough for me to be nervous about it, sure.
Now, I was reading about your involvement with the Starlight Children's Foundation, which is connected with Steven Spielberg. Tell us a little bit about that, if you would, Emma.
Well, the Starlight Children's Foundation is a charity that I started, over 20 years ago, and we help grant wishes to children who are critically, chronically, or terminally ill. And we also provide entertainment for them when they're in hospital. In fact, every paediatric ward in the UK now has what we call a Starlight Fun Centre, which keeps kids occupied with video games and DVDs and all of these games that are very distracting for them, which, as a parent, that normally drives you mad. But when your child's not well, it's actually the best thing you can do is distract them.
Mm. And getting back to your career in Dynasty and your UK television career as well, do you think we're lacking these days? Do you think there's something missing these days from our soaps? I mean, we do remember with fondness Dallas and Dynasty because they were over the top and they were larger than life and they were the big costumes and the big hairstyles. Do you think we'll ever see a return to that? Yes.
It is escapism, isn't it? So yes, maybe the financial situation at the moment in the world will mean that there will be more that requirement for escapism and glamour and all of those things. Though, of course, it makes them more expensive to make. And as you said, everything's cutting back. So I don't know. It would be nice to think that we'll have a bit of glamour in the soaps again.
But in the meantime, if we do want some glamour, we can always go out and buy Dynasty on DVD.
Or go to the fashion show tonight.
Indeed.
That's going to be very glamorous.
Indeed. Well, I hope you have a fantastic evening this evening in Liverpool.
Thank you very much. Well, it's all for a good cause. A lot of the money is going to be going to Variety Club Children's Charity, which is another charity that I've worked with often. And so I'm delighted to be there to help out with that.
Well, as you say, it's a great cause. And also, as well, Comic Relief are going to be benefiting evening,
that's
I believe.
That's right, Comic Relief as well, because it is Red Nose Day today, isn't it? Do you think they'll make me wear a red nose?
You never know, they
would
might
kind of spoil
do.
Spoil the look, wouldn't it?
I'm sure whatever they make you wear, you're going to look absolutely fabulous and glamorous.
No, but thank you, fingers crossed.
Emma, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Nice to talk to you too.
This is the City Cafe with Dean Sullivan. City Talk 105.9.
This is the Sullivan Show, taking you right through till 4 o'clock today. Taking you through the afternoon. Now, if you're a fan of X Factor, you'll need no introduction to my next guest in the cafe. Joining me now is Owen. Hi, Owen.
Hi, you all right?
Yeah, you're going to be playing down at the arena tonight, is that right?
We are playing down at the arena tonight.
Tell us about that. It's the X Factor tour, isn't it?
Yeah, it's huge. It's the biggest tour they've ever done. It's basically sold out over the whole UK, so...
And where have you been to so far on the tour?
We've been to Aberdeen, we've been in London, Manchester and Sheffield, and now we're in Liverpool tonight, so it's really exciting.
And are you having a good time?
Yeah, so far, it's great. Liverpool's a great city. It's got great donuts and great girls.
Oh, well, there you go. Have you been to Liverpool before?
Never. This is my first time.
Your first time? Oh, well, that's, welcome to Liverpool,
Thank
anyway.
Thank you very much.
I'm sure you're going to have a great show. That's nice. Is it the case that, when you go on X Factor, before you sort of... get down to the finalists or whatever, do you have to sign a contract with them that says you'll do something like this, a tour, if you're the winner or runners-up?
You have to sign a contract, because if you become the winner or maybe you get a record deal and stuff, you have to go by rules and stuff that you're signed to that company and you do the tour and also.
So you can't get a record deal then, can you, while you're taking part in X Factor?
Not until after the show.
And then you have to do it with them?
Well, it depends if someone else approaches you.
Okay, so who else is taking part in the show tonight then?
There's Laura, Daniel, there's Ruth, Rachel, Diana, myself, JLS and Alex. And then there's a few surprises put in as well.
All right, so we might be seeing Leona Lewis then, won't
we? Never know.
You never know. Are there any tickets left for the show? It's very popular, it's probably...
Yeah, well, I just gave away... Well, I had two spare and I just gave away two there earlier this morning to two girls.
Okay. So, and where did you find them?
In a different radio station, I think it was.
Oh, okay. You were on someone else.
Yeah.
So tell us about the X Factor then. Has it sort of turned your life around? Has it changed your life in any way?
It has changed my life by a click of a finger. You know, it's just come from this young kid from Ireland.
So whereabouts are you from in Ireland?
Derry.
Right, okay.
So,
I remember seeing a clip of The X Factor where you went back home to visit the family. And did you have a new addition to the family?
A new little sister.
Right,
so
yeah.
So it was
okay.
Cool. Yeah, and it's just changed so dramatically overnight, and now everyone knows who I am and always approaching me.
And how has your family taken to it?
Well, the first few weeks, you know, they were a bit like they didn't know what to do, but now they're sort of used to it, and so it's okay now.
So how did you get involved with The X Factor then? Whose idea was it? Did you see it? Had you been a fan of the show?
Yeah, I watch the show every year. I love watching from the auditions to the live finals. I used to watch it every year, and I just thought maybe I should enter for a bit of fun. I only entered myself, and I said, look, I've got an audition next week.
And how did you go about entering? Did you do it online, or did you have to write out a letter?
I did it online.
Yeah.
And I just decided to do it. And once I got through the first round and then got through boot camp, I thought, like, maybe this is getting serious.
Well, tell us about the first round then. What did you have to do?
Before you see the judges, you know, you have to do a couple of rounds before that. And
and who's judging you there?
Just producers, some people that work in the show, the producers. Okay. And so you have a lot of work to
do. They're picking out the ones that they think that the panel should be seeing.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Including the worst ones as well, I suppose. Yeah. Okay, so that's the first round. You got through to boot camp. What was that like?
Yeah, then that was like a 9-day period, which is quite cool because you got to meet everyone. And then when I got through that, I thought I was getting really serious, so really, really wanted it then.
Where did you have to go then for the boot camp?
O2 in London.
Right, okay. And what was that like?
That was really cool. Really, really good time.
Yeah, yeah. Did you ever think, have any idea in your head that you might just win it?
I never really thought that. I never got too big for myself. I just kept my feet in the ground and kept trying to get free. Because when Laura went out, it was a big shock to everyone. I thought, right, nobody's position here is safe at all. Everyone's fighting each week. That's the way I went about it.
Now, was she the one that you had a little bit of a fling with? Who was that?
That was, didn't really have a fling with anyone, but it was in the papers about Diana and stuff.
And was that not true?
No.
No, they just made that up?
No, we were just really close. I think it was because same age and we were in the house all the time, but there's nothing going on at all.
And what's it like actually being in front of, the likes of Simon and so on?
The first time I was really scared, but then when, you know, you get to know them and you're comfortable around them, then it's just like they're people you see in the street then.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to my special guest in the cafe, is Owen from The X Factor. You are, of course, listening to City Talk 105.9. What sort of stuff do you get to do in the show then tonight at the arena, Owen?
Well, everyone's got like a 15-minute set, and you know, you perform your songs, and you know, you talk to the crowd, and you know, yes, basically you're judged on your performance. You're not being judged by any judge. You can just do it all and have fun.
And what sort of songs are you covering?
You have to do the ones from the show because that's what people know you by.
Right. So what will you be singing?
It's a surprise.
See. Okay. All right then. So they'll just have to wait and see then.
Yeah.
So is this your career now? Is this what you want to do for the rest of your time?
Yeah, this is what I set my heart on doing. Whether that happens or not, maybe in the near future, we'll just have to see what happens.
And you've got a record deal though, haven't you?
I have, and I just finished recording my first album, and the album will be out on April the 6th, and you can actually go online, owenquigmusic.com, and you can download it.
Excellent. So, and you've got a single out?
It's called 28,000 Friends.
Well, where does that come from, 28,000 Friends?
It was written by James Bourne from Busted, and he was kind enough to give me the song because I performed Year 3000 on the show, and it's basically about the internet these days and that people are never off it. And the storyline of the song is a girl and a boy, and his girlfriend's got like loads of friends on the computer and stuff, and he's like, go and just give me some attention. So
excellent. Do you ever write any of your own stuff? Play any instruments?
Yeah, just been writing like stuff at home, but nothing really special yet.
Okay. Well, we hope you have a fantastic time down at the arena tonight. I'm sure you're going to get a huge Liverpool welcome.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, and we're going to play out with your latest single.
Sunshine.
No, no, no.
Do you ever think that it's a waste of time? You and your 28,000 friends.
to find some room for me in your life. You and your 28,000 friends.
Listen and log on to the Voice of Liverpool. City Talk 105.9.